Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, "Hey, Marky"? It might be almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Touch, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Tuesday edition, the Tausch summer sabbatical rolls on, and so does our cavalcade of outstanding Cousin Subs of the Day. Cousin Subs, we believe in better edition. The Nate Hobbs is what I imagine Jesse being like as a little boy growing up in Muskego. Ma and Pa Nelson tell him, "Don't do that, Jesse. Don't do that, Jesse." And then Jesse does it anyway. And then he gets put in a timeout, just like Nate Hobbs did yesterday.
"I don't think you know me at all."
Edition. Oh, you always listened. You always did. Only child. You always did what mommy and daddy told you to do. You're right. You were perfect.
"They don't call me the hall monitor for nothing."
Okay, maybe I'm wrong, but that is what happened to Nate Hobbs. I can tell you that. Edition. The Elgton Jenkins is back on the field, and he just wanted to spend more time with his family. That's all. That's all. That's what it says on Twitter, so that must have been it. Edition. And the... if you said, Jason, you can trade your life and live someone else's, who would you pick? There are honestly, not Matt Damon, not the president, not any of those things. There are two people that I would pick. One is Charles Woodson, because he's cooler than anybody I've ever met. The second one is our Cousin Sub of the Day edition of Wilde and Tausch. On 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on the all-new, all-redesigned, all-free ESPN Wisconsin app, which you can find both in the Apple and Android app stores. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. Practice number 6 on tap for the Packers in training camp. Jesse Nelson is in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios. And so is the Pro Football Hall of Famer, the Wisconsin Athletics Hall of Famer. What else am I missing? The College Football Hall of Famer, the America's Beef Growers Hall of Famer, the Bagel Hall of Famer. It's this guy right here. Here he is, right there, with a hockey stick. There he is, right there. And I can barely see him because he's in a very undersized shirt that is in camouflage. It is Joe Thomas. Joseph, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Already being critical of my outfit here. I see this is the workplace just harassment jealous. That I've been trying to avoid all summer, but Tausch just has to go and take his long sabbatical right at the beginning of training camp, and so they called me out of the bullpen, and this is the warm reception I'm getting. Oh, man, great to see you. And I'm very sad that you're not in Madison, though, because Jesse promised the next time I'm on the show, we're going to be able to meet and say hi in person and embrace and be able to share those stories face to face, maybe sign an autograph for you or a friend, possibly. But no, I just get to hear more stories about the book that I might be able to sign someday if you ever did come down to Madison here.
I have your address. I'll just mail it to you and you can mail it to me back.
That's easy button.
It is. I will say this, and I meant this when I said it. I got to put little Joe, the hockey player, back on the shelf here in my office. I'll say this. You are, for a guy who has accomplished what you have, and I'm not here to blow sunshine up your camouflage shirt, but for a guy who's accomplished everything you are as down to earth and normal of a guy. And I know Annie will back me up on this, but like the fact that just like the rest of us, you're walking around your house in your underwear when you were about to get the Hall of Fame call.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, you tell dad bad jokes, you're self-deprecating. You had times, even as one of the greatest football players in NFL history, where you had imposter syndrome. Like we just love you, man. And we love that you're helping us out when Tausch is gone. And you are, you're one of those. Because then I'd be able to have the great family just like I do, and I'd be able to tell dad jokes just like I do, and I'd have more hair than you would have, but otherwise I'd be built, right? It'd be great to be you. How are things? What have you been doing? Catch us up, because I think you maybe were on with Tausch one day when I took a rare day off, but other than that, the only time I've really gotten to talk to you was when Jesse was talking about how much he loves Gotham bagels, and I put the kibosh on that today for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, it's
kind of rudely.
It was a little rude, but we've got a special surprise. It's not Gotham Bagels. Don't worry. I'm a good listener. But no, summer's been great. You know, anybody that's got four kids that are kind of in that middle school, grade school era, they realize like how busy these summers have really gotten when you're driving kids to dance and volleyball and lacrosse camp. And I dropped my son off at Badger basketball camp this morning. So they definitely stay busy and they're not growing any moss this summer. So it's been super busy, but it's just fun. Like I never played lacrosse growing up, but being able to watch your kids do some of these sports that you really have no experience where they can kind of teach you is awesome because it's role reversal. And for a dad, it's just really fun being able to sit back, enjoy, and allow the kids' passion for something to really ooze over onto you. So it's been a great summer, man.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I am getting a little bit melancholy because with our girls being a freshman and a sophomore, I know that my favorite job of all the things we get to do as dads is the drive to and from activities, because talking and catching up and laughing. And I know that those times are starting to run out. So that's great. And by the way, and they don't need advertising from me, but I do want to say this. The University of Wisconsin athletic program does a phenomenal job with its camps. Like Sydney went to the volleyball camp. She left a better player and had a blast and made new friends. And so that's why we do these camps. We want our kids to improve, obviously, but we want them to have fun in the summertime doing the stuff they love. And so it's great that you dropped off your son at Badger basketball camp. But they do. I cannot recommend it enough. It's been a great experience for our girls, and I'm looking forward to more and more before they maybe someday are Badgers. So, Joe, I do want to ask you one thing, though, to get on track of football, and that is this. You played in the league forever. You're one of the all-time greats. What's the proper way to practice? Because Nate Hobbs could use your help.
Well, whether you're going as fast and as hard as you can physically or you're not, the most important thing is that your brain is always working at game speed. And so I've talked to some of the guys about this recently, because towards the end of my career, I really didn't practice all that much because my knee was really bad and I had some other ailments that just didn't allow me to practice during training camp all the time or during the preseason. But I learned a lot of valuable lessons, because I think a lot of young guys, they see a walkthrough or like a practice where maybe you're not hitting as, oh, it's a day off. Good. I can relax. I don't have to worry about getting beat. But actually, those are the practices that were the most important to me because it allowed my brain to be at full speed and my technique to be perfect. And I didn't have to worry about losing a rep, right? Because nobody wants to lose a rep when it's one-on-one pass brush and all the fans are out there, they're yelling and screaming and they're keeping track. The media, the guys like Jason Wilde are back there with their notepad writing down every time you won a rep or you lost a rep, right? So you obviously want to be at your best there. So winning is the priority in that situation. But when you do have an opportunity to practice without pads or to practice at walkthrough tempo, that's your opportunity to use your brain at game speed to hit perfect positioning. And the timing is going to be synchronized with everybody else because they're working at the same speed. And that's really when I would improve and ingrain those techniques and those processes that I go through every single rep in my muscle memory forever. And you get so many more reps because you're not getting as tired. But I know that you have to be completely locked in 100% mentally in those situations and give everything you have with that focus or you're not going to get anything out of it. And so I think learning to practice is one of the hardest things to do as a professional, because you do have times when, hey, there's no pads, so we're going to hit, but we're not going to take guys to the ground. Okay, now we're walkthrough tempo. We don't even have helmets on. Now we got to be able to learn how to be good teammates and to be able to service each other to figure out, okay, now the offense is trying to get this done, so we need everybody in the right gap so we can get the footwork and get the eyes down. But you always should be out there practicing with a purpose, being extremely intentional about what you're trying to get done, and then you're going to be able to make the progress that you can in the era of not two-a-days, in the era when you're not putting pads on all the time. You got to learn how to practice and you got to learn how to be a professional.
So the issue obviously yesterday is that Nate Hobbs, who you remember that, Jesse, when I said that I watched some of his games because I wasn't familiar with him, and I said the thing that jumped out from watching him was that he was physical.
Oh, you watched two games and two drives in those two games that the highlights on NFL Plus gave you.
That's your
Oh, was that Tosh? You have to let us know who that was, by the way. But I loved it.
Not my best work, but I think we all got it.
Nailed it.
And Tosh was killing me for that, right? Turns out that my diagnosis was spot on, because not only was he physical in the games, but now he's over the line physical in practice. And Marshawn Lloyd leaves with a leg injury because he went low and tackled in a, I understand they're in pads, but not supposed to do what he did. Matt LaFleur gave them a big spiel and a video before practice to emphasize how to go about practicing. I don't know what they do in Vegas. I guess what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, including in practice, where you just go full out all the time. Because this was an issue in the non-padded practices, and then an hour into the first practice in pads, Nate Hobbs hits a guy low, and Matt LaFleur boots him for several series. He got benched. He literally said this, I got put in timeout. So, Joe, having played as long as you did, and as you pointed out, toward the end there, you were on the Chad Clifton big Lamborghini program, right?
Yeah,
to get you to game day, right? And, and you know, Tosh has some pretty lame nicknames that he handed out. But the big Lamborghini for Chad Clifton of you only drive him on Sundays and otherwise he sits in the garage was pretty darn good. But explain to people how you are supposed to practice from a physicality standpoint while also looking out for your teammates, because you're all on the same team. You know, it's fine if you're going to be super physical against the Lions on September 7th, but on July 28th, you're not supposed to be taking out your backup running back.
Yeah, we don't want to see that. And it's especially important to understand where guys are expecting to be hit. And so you have different tempos throughout practice. Even if you're in a training camp, full padded practice, the coach is going to talk about at the beginning of the drill, like, what's the tempo? Are we thud? Which basically just means we're not hitting anybody below the waist. We're just going to wrap up with our arms. We're going to try to get into good position when we're tackling. We're going to swarm to the football, but we're not taking anybody to the ground. Then you have a little bit more physical than thud, where, hey, we're not going to go low on our own teammates, obviously, but, hey, we're going to be hitting guys a little bit harder. And so everybody's ready for that, right? Because as a running back, you're going to be protecting yourself in certain situations and certain drills with your legs because you know guys are going to be coming for your legs. But if they're not supposed to be down there, that's not exactly what you're focusing on and your intentions are in that moment. And so it can be really dangerous. But from a coach's standpoint, it's difficult to walk that line because you do have to have that balance. When you got a guy like Nate Hobbs, who is physical, who is aggressive, you don't want to take away his superpower, right? Because that's maybe what makes him who he is. But I think for the player, just reinforcing the understanding of, one, we can't be taking out our own teammates, especially when they're not expecting it. But two, like learning how to practice and be under control and have that controlled physicality and violence is part of becoming a professional and taking that next step in your performance, because it's more than just running around wildly, throwing your body in certain places. Like, there's a technique to everything you do, including tackling. And so you have to be under control and know where you're trying to hit. And once you get to that level, actually the game starts slowing down because you're not just going as fast as you can without thinking about it. You're actually thinking about every step you make, every little turn of your shoe and where you're trying to aim, where you're putting your helmet when you're trying to make a tackle, or where you're putting your nose and your hands when you're making a block. And it's focusing on those smaller details that allow you to get that game to really slow down. They talk about, you know, Olympic archers. You always say, you know, if you aim at a smaller spot, you're going to miss smaller. Whereas if you're just aiming at the giant target, you've got an opportunity to miss a lot bigger. And we don't give our brains enough credit for how minutiae, probably not a word, how minutiae you can aim and you can focus even when your body's moving at full speed. And that's a talent and a skill that you have to learn. And I think it was really good for Coach LaFleur to really reinforce that. Like, hey, we love physicality, but we can't take our own guys. And actually, you're going to be a better player if you're able to control your body better in each practice situation that we're in, so that when the game time comes and you are going full speed, you're not reckless and not injuring yourself or your teammates because you're not able to control yourself in those situations, those violent moments when you are coming in and trying to make a hit on a ball carrier.
Well, I got news for you. Minutiae on this show,
look it up,
is a great word.
All right, thank you. Perfect.
Because the guy that usually sits in your chair is making up words all the time, so it's perfect for us. I do want to get into that physicality thing a little bit more, though, because as much as Tausch teased me about pointing it out, I think there's probably an argument to be made that these guys didn't always have enough of that on defense, and they started to be more of a physical group last year. And so I want to get into that coming up before we talk to Evan Cohen. But before we can do that, and before we can get more stories from Joe Thomas, and we can run off the list of all the different Hall of Fames he's been inducted into, we need to hear from a Packers Hall of Famer and a Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin Hall of Famer. And that, of course, is Mark Tauscher telling us from beyond vacation about Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. So after we hear from Tausch, we'll hear more from our cousin sub of the day, Pro Football Hall of Famer Joe Thomas. Next, it's Wilde and Tausch.
ESPN Wisconsin's Mark Tauscher for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. For windows with the strongest resilience, you need the Pella Experience. The Pella Experience Center lets you see, feel, open, close, and compare dozens of windows and door options from 7 different Pella lines, all side by side. Stop by soon, because if you order by July 31st, you can get 0 interest for up to 5 years. Certain restrictions do apply. Visit the Pella Experience Center in Brookfield or schedule your free in-home consultation today at PellaWI.com.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
Continuing with Joe Thomas as our cousin sub of the day, cousin subs we believe in better. Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike scheduled to appear coming up next. So, Joe, I had a good conversation with Nate Hobbs. It was a little weird. It was the first time I talked to him, like, outside of a group, one-on-one. So it was kind of like, hey, you got in a lot of trouble today. Hi, I'm Jason. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
But he, you know, one of the things I said was, you know, obviously you got in some trouble today, but when we get to September 7th, guys in this locker room are going to love this physicality, right? And he's like, yes, look, what I did today was bad. I feel horrible. It was horrible. But on September 7th, it's going to be real good. And he's right, right? I mean, that brings an attitude. That brings a brand of football. Like, there's value in that. Having played as long as you did you have guys that were kind of that guy who were so physical that they elevated and got other guys to play physical? I mean, it's mostly on the defensive side, but I'm sure you had, you know, Betonio or some of these other guys that you played with that you didn't want to mess with them because they were bringing it in a big way.
Yeah, I think it's important to have one player on either side of the ball that kind of has that loose, deranged, unhinged mentality that when it's game day, you know that that's the dude that you want fighting in your corner in a dark alley. And clearly Nate Hobbs is that guy, and that's who you want to bring that energy, that physicality, because especially on defense, like, it's hard to go out there every single play on defense, run to the ball, be as physical at the point of attack as you possibly can, and then go ahead and smoke the guy on the other team who's got the football. And sometimes, you know, on offense, it's a little bit more methodical. It's a little bit more rhythmic. And so it's much more about, like, your routine and your technique and your timing and your assignment. Whereas defense, like, you need that guy who's going to bring that energy when maybe the defense is a little bit down, because they ride the wave of emotion way more than we do on offense. Like, we try to eliminate emotion on offense, so it's not something that we play with. But on defense, they have to play with emotion on every play. And you need that spark. You need that guy that you can look to when maybe your defense isn't really playing at their best and you need a turnover, or you need something that kind of changes the mood on that side of the football. Maybe you gave up a couple big plays already, or you had your best defensive package called for the week and the offense just gutted you, right? And so you need that guy who will help you bounce back, who can be that spark on defense. And so that's why it's just such a delicate balance that a coach has to walk, to be able to not take that away from their guy, but help them understand how you have to be smart and you got to take your shots when it's legal, when it's available, and certainly not on your teammates, because it's just the same thing as, like, hey, we just got a play made on us on defense, and their offensive lineman, their Joel Betonio, he sprinted down and he peeled one of our guys off the pile. The ref didn't see it, but now I know I need to take it out on this guy, but if I do it right now, the ref's standing there and I'm going to get a 15-yard penalty. So it's learning that discipline and learning when and where to take those shots that can spark your defense, that it's all part of that maturation process. And Nate's a young guy, right? What is he, 26 right now? This is his fifth year, I think, or so,
yep,
in the league.
Year five, yep.
So he's still learning. He's still learning what it means to be a professional, to give that team the spark that it needs. They brought you here to be, but also understanding, hey, there's a time and a place for everything.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I'm sure they liked him was his physicality. Now, the other part of this is, and he, you know, for all the criticism that Jaire Alexander took during his time here, Nate Hobbs has missed a good chunk of time, too, because of the way he plays. And one of the things I asked him, too, was, you know, is there any way to still be who you are, but just dial it back just a smidge so you're protecting yourself? Because you don't help these guys if you're, like, he broke his hand last year, right? Playing the way he plays. And he had a great line. He's like, look, if I do that and Derrick Henry comes around the corner and I am more interested in protecting myself than I am in tackling him, he's going to stiff arm my ass and he's going to go for 80 and I'm going to look like a bozo, which I love anybody that can use the term bozo.
I love it.
So we don't get bozo enough.
Yes.
And fans are going to think I'm soft. So I, you know, all I have is the name on the back of my jersey, and I have to stand for being the player that I am. So what I thought was interesting, and this is one of the reasons why I love what I get to do, is that, you know, from the outside looking in, it's just two things. One, I think I saw on social media people saying, why is this guy getting criticized so much? You know, we need guys that are physical. You're not wrong about that, but there's a way to do it in practice. It's like, you know, Jesse, I told you this yesterday. It's like Zac Efron taught us in High School Musical. We're all in this together when it comes to practice. So you can't have your guys. I know you don't like Zac Efron, and I'm going to keep bringing him up now.
What's wrong with Zac Efron? Well, wouldn't you be if you were that handsome and that famous? I mean, he's a great actor. I love him. Anyways, we digress.
So that's the problem with it. But the other part of this is, and look, I understand
that that when fans are looking at this from the outside, they're not getting, they're not standing in the locker room. That's my job, is to bring that to them, right? That's why I'm here. And it's a little more nuanced, a little not minutiae, but almost more nuancey, because this is, I got a really interesting insight into who this guy was during our conversation. Like, he told the story of being in seventh grade and being playing football and being undersized, short and little. And he played this way when he was 13 years old. And there were people around him who said, hey, if this kid gets bigger, you better watch out. And that's exactly what happened, right? He went and played at Illinois, and now he's in the NFL. So there's more to it than that. But at the same time, you got to take care of your guys. And nothing that I'm saying excuses the fact that you can't, you just can't do that in a practice. And all these other guys understand the rules of engagement. So I'm curious when we get out there this morning if he alters the way he plays. So we will see if he does that.
Yeah, I think you said something that's interesting to me, and just reflecting on my own career, playing 10 and a half years, never missed a play. Obviously, there was injuries along the way, but one of the things I attributed to is at the moment of contact, whether it be a block or if I'm going downfield and trying to help my running back, push him, whatever, like, I never blacked out and just turned myself into a human missile, right? Because everything you're trying to do still has a technique. I think back to Ray Lewis, right? He rarely ever missed a game. He was so physical, but he knew how to tackle. He knew at the point of attack not to just close your eyes and go as hard as you can and just be in there with reckless abandon, because a lot of times that's how you get hurt, because you're not seeing your teammate's helmet slip in there at the last second, so you don't know exactly which side to put your helmet on. You're not exactly clear where the ball is, so you're not sure if I should wrap his thigh, if I should wrap his ankle, if I should wrap him around his waist. And just being able to see those little things and allowing everything to slow down at the moment that you're making a tackle or at the moment a blocker is coming to you, I think is an important part of learning how to take that next step and be that Pro Bowl or be that All Pro. And it's going to help you stay on the field, because, as you mentioned, he missed time in each of his first four seasons because he does play with that physicality. But there's a way to be physical, to set the tone on defense, to come in and, you know, knock people's jock straps off the way that, you know, you used to back in the day in football. But you can't just go black and close your eyes and forget about what you're trying to do in that moment, because everything you do in life has a technique and everything you do on the football field has a technique. And I think that's an important message that Coach LaFleur wanted to send as well. It's not just about only taking care of your teammates, but we're trying to get something done at every moment of every play. And just because it's time to tackle doesn't mean we turn the brain off and just turn ourselves into a human missile and explode on our ball carrier, right? There's something that has to happen in that moment, and it should be focusing on that detail. And that's how the game slows down, and that's how you become a better player who now also can make big turnover plays and can knock the ball loose, which is one of the things that people have been critical with Nate Hobbs. Just hasn't generated a ton of turnovers, even though he does play fast and play physical. But seeing where that football is at that moment of truth and being able to knock it out, rip it out, the big old peanut punch with Charles Tillman, like, those are the things that separate the good players from the great players.
We're always smarter when we have Joe Thomas in. We also usually are more well-fed than we normally are. But we'll see if he's got anything up his sleeve for the team at the Everlight Solar Studios. We've got Evan Cohen coming up next from Unsportsmanlike. Before we get there, I want to remind you to tune in to the Behind the Bucks podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Behind the Bucks brings you exclusive access and untold stories about the greatest stars and moments in Bucks history. Go behind the scenes of Giannis's Emmy-nominated documentary. Hear about the true origins of Bucks and Six culture and more. Find Behind the Bucks on Bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, the new ESPN Wisconsin app, and wherever you get your podcasts. Again, Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher. Joe Thomas is our cousin sub of the day. Evan Cohen is our guest next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Your state, your teams, your ESPN. The ESPN Wisconsin app. Customizable just to you. Find the ESPN Wisconsin app in the Apple or Android app stores today.
I'm throwing caution. What's it gonna be? Tonight the winds of change are blowing wild and free. If I don't get out of this town, I just might be the one.
You know what that music means? to see him not only on Unsportsmanlike, but he's been on just about every other show ESPN has as well. And he's on our show, and he's on video. We'll see who he brought along. Because sometimes he does that as well. It is Evan Cohen on Wildy and Tausch. Nice sport coat. Wow, you look nice.
Yeah, I got a lot of praise on this. I don't know. I'm trying to up my game a little bit. I don't know that it's actually working, but I'm trying. And by trying to, I mean if there is like a $30 or $40 sport coat on sale anywhere, I'd buy that. And that's about as far as I go.
Before we get into, you know, I don't know how you're going to handle today, because usually this segment is you and Tausch getting after each other. But with Joe Thomason as our cousin sub of the day, I have a question for you, because I said this to start the show. I love my life. I am really lucky to live the life I have with the people that I have in it. I am extremely grateful. There are two people who I would live their life instead if given the opportunity. One is Charles Woodson, who's the coolest guy I've ever met. And Joe Thomas is the other one, because he's just a way, way cooler, fitter, more successful, wealthier version of me. He tells dumb dad jokes. He loves being a dad. He's everything that I'm not and yet am, if that makes sense. Who, if you could be anyone else, who would you want to be?
Okay, first of all, Jason, I think Joe is a cooler, better looking, fitter version of Tausch is really what he actually is. I mean, if we're really going to be real about this, like, wouldn't the better comp?
Jason, you
and I would be the comp to each other. Like, we're both, like, dorky, loser media people that are married with two kids. Like, that's kind of what, and both went to Wisconsin and both kind of tried to do this our whole lives, right? Like, that's us. Would you agree with that?
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Joe and Tausch grew up in Wisconsin, played in essence the same-ish position, and oh, by the way, one of them is a Hall of Famer, and the other has to deal with the two of us every day. I mean, so if you're really going to be real about this, what Joe Thomas is should just be Better Tausch. He should just be named Better Tausch.
Wow.
But to answer the question, and the thing, by the way, the thing that I admired about Joe and getting to know Joe slightly over the years is two things: honesty and never getting too high and never getting too low. I remember a conversation I had with Joe that'll stay private-ish, where he said to me basically, well, I'll make it public in this regard. Okay. It doesn't make sense for you guys to come after me to do this every day, and here's why. And it wasn't about us not wanting him or him not wanting us. He gave the greatest reasons, and I'm just like, I remember calling Tausch or you or Craig or anybody and be like, Joe kind of talked us out of the idea of going after him every day because he's the greatest guy ever and he's so honest. And I have such envy for people like that. Like, I have tremendous admiration for Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr has gone through horrible things in his life that people probably don't realize. And the guy is never too high, never too low, and just wins at the highest of level. So people that are unaffected by serious things, no. People that are unaffected by non-serious things are the people that I want to be like when I grow up. Does that make sense?
It does.
Like,
Joe
what
Thomas.
Bothers you, Joe? Like, what, Joe, what bothers you that would be a complete non-consequence in life?
It's funny you say that, because the only thing that really bothers me, my real pet peeve, is when people think something's a really big deal when it's not. Or when they're wrong about getting mad. Like, they cut me off on the highway, and now they're mad. I'm like, you can't be mad. I'm the one that's supposed to be mad. Relax. You know, or at home.
So
when
you're
the kids
mad
are,
about them being mad about
yes.
you not being mad.
I'm like,
mad.
This is not a big yeah. deal. Relax. Haven't you been in the field fourth down? It's the third quarter. You need a touchdown. It's third and 10. You're on the 37-yard line. That's pressure. That's a serious situation that we should stress out about. But this is not. Relax.
So there's nothing, Joe, there's nothing that is completely just meaningless that is more meaningful to you than, like, playing in the NFL or any, like, something that, like, oh, God, if I'm not good at this, if I don't do this well, it's going to drive me nuts.
I don't have anything like that.
Only parenting.
Yeah, I think the big thing is when Annie comes over to my side of the sink and uses my toothpaste and then leaves the cap off. Because I'm very specific about putting it in this exact spot, and I put the cap on because yeah. I don't want my toothpaste to dry out. And she comes over. She uses it all willy-nilly. She's got her own toothpaste. Then she leaves the cap off.
Right.
And then she leaves it over there. It's like that type of thing is what it gets at me, but I would never say anything because I'm a great husband. Let's be honest. I'm going to keep that one to myself. But every time it happens, it's like one little paper cut to my soul. I'm like, oh, not again. More toothpaste.
You know, while we're discussing household stuff, do you guys – I've always found this weird. I don't like – I think that two different people, one puts the dishes in the dishwasher and the other takes it out. I'm good at putting the dishes in the dishwasher. I'm terrible at taking them out. How about that? Do you guys have that in your house, or does the same person put them in and take them out?
Why are you bad at taking them out? You don't know where to put them once you remove them? Is that it?
Good follow-up. The journalist that is Jason Wilde.
You took the bait. Took the bait.
Here's why. I don't like spending the time to dry them off. I'm just like, all right, I'm just going to put it. Like, why do I have to dry it? Like, what am I not going to use a plate if it has water on it? So I just put them back, and then, like, my wife will grab them, and then, like, the plates will be soaking wet because I won't dry them.
Are you telling me that you don't have a dishwasher that dries your dishes?
Yeah.
Let me introduce you to my friends over here at the local appliance store. Basically, every dishwasher in there dries them for you, so there's a little tip to keep your marriage alive.
But there's some time. You've never had, like, a wet spot on a dish? Ever?
Maybe.
Rarely.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
You know what we learned, ladies and gentlemen? Let me announce something.
This is my bougie
Joe
life.
Joe Thomas has never done the dishes.
Thomas has never done the dishes. False. Blasphemy. Erroneous. No, I actually enjoy the process of putting the dishes in an organized manner, getting them washed, because then when I can put them away, it's like the fastest, most amazing thing. All the plates, right there. All the forks, they're in their spot. Just grab them, right there. And it's just such a great feeling of satisfaction and completion, you know? Like, I hate making my bed. If I never had to make my bed a day in my life, I would be much happier because of it, because it's so frustrating. The last thing I want to do when I'm getting ready to get into bed is take all the covers off and put the pillows exactly where my old hips and back need to be. But like when it's all perfect, I just like hop into bed, like the clothes fall on the ground. I'm like, whoop. So the one thing I do like to do in the morning, though, is I do like to take the dishes out of the dishwasher as I'm making the coffee. It's just like that one thing, you know, there's some book about like you should always make your bed. Well, I think that's hogwash. But what you should do is complete something that you know you can do in the morning. And for me, it's like taking those dishes out and putting them away. I'm like, it's a great day. Time for coffee and maybe a nap.
Is this ruining
Well said, better Tev.
I'm glad you said it that way, Evan. Is this ruining our theory slightly? There's no way Tausch is filling the dishwasher at home in such a precise manner that then it makes it easier to empty it. So we have found a difference between the two.
Well, Tausch is also, I know Joe wouldn't do this. I sent Tausch an email the other day, I think it was yesterday, with like a bunch of things, and I know he's on vacation. What a surprise. It's a day that ends in Y. But I sent Tausch an email with like three questions, and he wrote back, looks great. I said, thanks. You answer the questions. Like, thank you for like, and it's not work stuff. It's personal stuff for the two of us have plans to do something, and I had a couple of questions, and it just looks great. Thanks, Tausch. Real helpful.
Oh, man. He is made for AI and ChatGPT. Do you think he can just set up some program and just automatically respond to Evan with something that'll keep him off my back for another day?
Yes.
That's sounds exactly. good.
Well
Great.
Said. Well said.
The thumbs up. Three questions. Great.
Thumbs up. So I'm curious, given the and obviously, Evan, you're at the top of the food chain with this job. You do a great job, and I'm not just saying that. It's absolutely true. On Sportsmanlike, but have you two worked together a lot, or are you just adept with creating chemistry with your co-hosts? Like, I like to think that when we go
you
through
two,
the Tausch sabbatical,
like who?
With Joe.
Who are you saying? Me and
you
no,
and Joe
and I have never done a show together. We've done guest hits, obviously, many of times. He came on. He was unbelievably kind enough to come on with us when I was on Sirius and now on ESPN as well. The most memorable moment when we, in our first few months on ESPN, on national TV, he showed us his toenails, which was a great moment. But no, like Joe and I have spoken on the phone a few times and met at a few events, but No, I've never, we've never, to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever done a show co-hosting together.
No, I don't think so, but I think we've just always got along because of the Wisconsin connection, obviously, but also because it's easy for us to commiserate about working with Tausch. And all the funny dealings that we have, the Christmas card one, that was so great. I just love all those little family controversies, and any opportunity to like dump on Tausch a little bit, I'm going to take it. And he's usually the number one dumper. I mean, here you go. You heard it at the beginning of the show here.
Yeah, he probably doesn't like Cal Raleigh of the Mariners, whose nickname is the Big Dumper. I mean, it's really.
So wait, aren't you guys both on the same page on the Christmas cards? Is that, am I misremembering that? You're both anti-Christmas cards?
I got to be honest. So I feel like everyone in text change, friends groups, work associate groups, if you've had a long-standing argument, by at some point you forget what side you're on, right? It's the beauty of stupidity. Honestly, it's like you don't forget what side you're on in politics. Not that I'm ever trying to go there. You don't forget what side you're on with like LeBron versus Jordan, and Ryan Russillo of the Ringer had a great line recently where he's like, "No one's ever changed their mind on LeBron versus Jordan." I think we talked about this, Jason. Like more people change their mind politically. Yeah. So. This started where I went on a rant that got some play, I guess, about how I think the Christmas card concept, sending your family to other people, is dumb. Because in essence,
what
you're looking for is someone to compliment your family and just simply say, "Wow, Joe, your family looks great." And like, then I feel weird. Then I'm like, okay, so now I got to throw out Joe and his wife and his kids. I have to throw them in the garbage because what am I going to keep them there for however long? So my whole thing is don't send the Christmas card, because anyone you would send the Christmas card to, theoretically, you should be in enough contact with on a regular basis to actually just have that relationship. Tausch had a major problem with that. I don't actually remember what side of the argument Joe was on.
It was a strong argument, let me tell you. Very memorable.
So to get to football briefly while we have you, you are obviously a Bill Belichick disciple. You love the
hoodie.
I don't
know if we can say disciple, considering I never worked for him. I would say stan, as in I'm like pathetic, and I believe everything he does from a football coaching perspective seems to be right.
So Joe and I spent the first portion of the show talking about Nate Hobbs getting booted out of practice for several series for hitting a guy yesterday during practice. He had already been warned during the non-padded practices. Matt LaFleur did a big spiel before practice about taking care of each other and how to practice and all this other stuff, and he does it again. Now, look, I understand. I don't think it was malicious. I believe him when he says that. But how do you think Belichick would have dealt with this? Because I thought Matt LaFleur, the fact that he booted him, to me, says something about Matt LaFleur, because I didn't know if he had that in him, frankly.
So I actually have an answer on this that, and I believe it's a former Joe Thomas teammate, that proves how empty threats are terrible. Real threats can be productive. During the time with New England, Belichick, I believe at four different times, had Jamie Collins, a linebacker, on his team. And Jamie Collins at times, not like legal stuff, would like slack off, let's say, wouldn't work as hard or do this, but he was extremely talented. And I believe that there were constant examples of internal discipline that would hopefully get him better. Well, if you go to the North Carolina website and you look at their assistant coaches, their inside linebackers coach is Jamie Collins, okay? So I don't know enough about the Nate Hobbs situation to comment specifically on that. I do know that in kind of consuming a lot of Belichick and Saban, discipline has to be done for a change by the person. It can't be for the sake of, I'm going to suspend Jason Wilde, but if Jason Wilde doesn't get better as a result of the suspension becomes irrelevant, right? I'm sure Joe could speak on this way better than I can. If a player is disciplined, the goal should be to get that player better, not to just get someone in trouble. And my guess is Matt LaFleur is doing that because he feels like the player you're mentioning, Nate Hobbs, has an ability to get better and learn from this and thus help the 53-man roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they signed
Am I right
up
in
for
that thinking,
reason.
Joe, or no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I played for two Belichick disciples, actually, not just Belichick stands. Romeo Crennel, right. My first 2 years, who was his defensive coordinator, and then worked together with him under Bill Parcells with the Giants. And then, of course, Eric Mangini for a couple years. And, hey, if it was thud or if we weren't tackling to the ground or we weren't going low and somebody did it, it was like, hey, I don't really care what the rule was that you broke. We're trying to put our culture and our stamp on this team, and that rules are important or we wouldn't have them. And so every rule, there was no warnings. It was not like, hey, you better clean up your room or else. It was like, hey, if you go low on a player in practice, I'm going to kick you out. If you fight, I'm going to kick you out. Like the Belichick tree of all the guys I had hated fighting because they thought it was a huge waste of time, which a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, when it's a pretty tough second day of practice, it's hot, it's August, and you're like, hey, all we got to do is get in a fight and then we don't have to practice. They're going to cancel practice. This is amazing. Let's go. All right. Hey, hey, a tuba Reuben, just – let's get in a fight after this play. We're cool and everything, but like, let's go at it a little bit. You get in a fight, coaches break it up. You act like you're all pissed off, and they're like, oh, that's it. We can't get anything done out of here. Practice is canceled. Hit the showers. You're like, yes, it worked. So the Belichicks, they were a little smarter. Those coaches.
A hypothetical? No, or is this that a happens. Practical?
Oh yeah. Hey, you watch these joint practices. If the penalty in joint practice is that we can't practice together anymore because we're getting in fights, you know how many fights are going to break out in that practice? There's going to be nothing but fights. But if the penalty is, hey, you got to play more in the preseason game, there won't be any fights. I can guarantee that. So, but when I was with Eric Mangini, just to prove the point of like, hey, rules are rules and we're going to enforce the rules, and it doesn't matter who you are. Braylon Edwards was our starting receiver, and he grabbed the water from the hotel when we were on the road in the preseason and then just forgot to pay his incidental fee at the end or whatever. And Eric Mangini fined him $1,701 for not paying his like $3 water tab at the end of the hotel stay, because he was like, hey, it's a team rule. You take care of your incidentals. If you don't do it, you get fined. This is the way it is. And it's just bringing that culture and enforcing those rules uniformly without any warnings. This is just who we're going to be, because if I'm up there and I say, hey, it's 3rd and 5 and I want you in a 5-yard split, I don't want you in a 5.5 or a 6. Like, what we say matters, and you need to listen to what we say. And if you can't do it, we'll find somebody else.
That's the most expensive bottle of water ever.
Very much. Even worse than Vegas.
Well, I'm fascinated by this. The $1,700 fine, did it work relative to Braylon Edwards understanding, okay, if I'm going to be here, these are the rules that I have to – I don't want to say changed away, because as you said, yeah, it's a total accident in that. But did you sense a difference was made as a result of that?
Absolutely. I think what it did was it just created that culture of like, hey, mistakes are not acceptable. Like, everything I tell you is important, not one thing more important than the other. And it doesn't matter if it's paying your incidentals at the end of the hotel stay, or if it's what your split's supposed to be in this route concept, or what the snap count is. Like, everything is important. Everything we do and we say is important. You have to listen. You have to take notes. You have to lock in. And I think the other important part that we didn't quite have, though, is like, when you're a coach and you have that hard line about everything you do, and it worked really well for Belichick because he had Brady, he had a great defense, he had a lot of great players. So guys start falling in line and they're willing to buy in for a time because they see that, hey, if we all do this together, all of a sudden you see those results. But if you're not getting those results and you're not getting those wins, it's those things that the players point to that this coach stinks. We need to get him out of here. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He fined me $1,700 and won for not paying my incidental on accident. Like, they don't understand us as players, and then it becomes a players versus coaches thing, which can be more destructive in the first place if you're not just enforcing the rules that you have. So it's really important to be able to have that follow through of having that success, so people are saying, you know what, this is a sacrifice. I don't love living under this dictatorship, but you know what, it's working pretty good. So we're going to just keep doing this thing. We're going to keep listening to this coaching staff, because in the end, we're all here to win, and that's really the only thing that matters.
And that is what, when I sit next to Chris Canty, every single day, he always brings, because he played for Parcells, he played for won a Super Bowl with Coughlin. He always says the job of the great coach, and I'm paraphrasing, is to get grown men to do things they don't want to do for the betterment of themselves and the team.
Bingo.
Because I'm sure that, like, paying $1,701 for a bottle of water is not something that Braylon Edwards wants to do. But if the mindset changes of, these 10 things are non-negotiable, I have to be perfect on those 10. And then the quarterback, as you said with Brady, starts to believe, like in the case of Nate Hobbs, if Jordan Love is enforcing these penalties, then it's you guys holding each other accountable, which is the best case scenario, I would assume.
Absolutely. You have your coaches. They kind of dictate, hey, this is our general culture, but then it's up to the leaders in the locker room to be able to enforce it, because there's only so many times your coach can fine you or yell at you before you just tune them out. But if when the coach yells at you, now you're getting your booty burned even worse by your quarterback and maybe one of your stars on the offensive line and one of the receivers, one of the guys in your own defensive meeting room, like all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, this is the way it's going to be. And you're like, I'm going to fall in line, right? And that's what makes a great team. That's what makes great culture, is because the coach puts it from top down and then the players believe in it and the leaders enforce it and hold everybody accountable.
All right, last thing before we let Evan go, because I'm glad we've got our Belichick stan and a guy who played for two of his coaches. Why, other than Vrabel, I think, have all of Bill Belichick's former assistants who went on to be head coaches not had success? What's it, Joe?
In the pros.
In the
pros.
Right.
That's fair. No, that's key.
Bill O'Brien had success in the college game.
Nick Saban's been pretty successful.
So I've heard that about him.
I'll tell you why. No, but that part is forgotten, honestly, Jason. Because he ran his pro team like a college program. Everyone is replaceable. It's part of a system, it's part of a culture, all the stuff that Joe just mentioned. And he's coaching the coaches to be great under his leadership with 12 at quarterback. And when you leave and you try to be him without 12 at quarterback, that's not a formula. But I've always said, well, why don't more college programs hire some of his assistants, because he teaches them how to run a college program. Now, we're going to see if I'm right about this, because he's now coaching a college program. Mm-hmm. But from Bill O'Brien to Kirk Ferentz to Pat Hill to obviously Nick Saban, there's been a lot of collegiate success with guys that have worked for him.
Joe?
Well, look at Nick Saban. The reason I think he didn't have success in the pro game, and I think he even mentioned it, was, hey, in college, I can recruit. I can make a huge difference by recruiting better players. If somebody at quarterback or a different position is not doing what I want, you know what? We got 3 more 5-star recruits that are right behind him, and it's easy to get guys motivated. In the NFL, you don't have that benefit. You got a salary cap. You got a lot more stipulations. And, hey, if Brady's not doing what we want, it's not like you can just go get a different quarterback. Or if your starting receiver is doing something that you don't like you're – words become a little bit more hollow when they know that their backup ain't going to do the job that they need to get done to win the game. So I think it would be interesting to see, it will be, I guess, with Belichick now in the college game, where it's a little bit more like the NFL, where the recruiting is a little bit more challenging, because you can't just collect all of the top talent anymore, because the NIL and the transfer portal, you get a lot more distribution of talent. So it'll be interesting. But I think one of the other problems that I saw, because I played for two different Belichick disciples, is that they a lot of times didn't have experience before they came in with Bill. And Bill would bring him in as a young kid, as an intern, and they learned everything about how he does things. They learned to see the game through his eyes. And then you're just never good as your mentor if all you do is learn to do what he does, and you've never stepped out on your own and see that, you know, you can skin a cat a different way and it works. Like, there's a lot of ways to coach and be successful in sports and in the NFL. There's not just the Belichick way. He found a great way, and it works really well for him with his personality and his situation, the best ever. However, that's not always the answer to every single test that you find. And so sometimes you have to do things and you have to lean back on experiences that a lot of those Belichick guys never had, because they never worked for anybody else. So they never saw that there's other ways to do things, and they never became their own person at coach.
Evan, we need to let you and your sport coat go. Thanks for your
time,
buddy.
Thank you.
That is Evan Cohen. You can see him and hear him on Unsportsmanlike every day across ESPN Wisconsin, of course, on ESPN as well. We'll have more with Joe Thomas, our cousin sub of the day for Tausch. Cousin subs, we believe in better. Next, it's Wilde and Tausch.
First of all, I love bringing this to the public.
The Rich Eisen Show.
NFC North. Top to bottom, you could say this is the best this division has ever been.
Coming September 2nd on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, and on Disney Plus.
I say go, baby, go, go, go.
great to catch up with him. That was really fun. And both Matt LaPay and I enjoyed the roast of Mark Tauscher that we were able to engage in, too. Now, Joe, I was half kidding yesterday when I texted you and Jesse and said, I don't want you bringing Gotham Bagels because I'm not there. We were in Madison for a couple days. I didn't connect with you or make it to Gotham Bagels. But if you'd have brought Gotham Bagels, I'd have been fine. You know, I'd have been jealous.
You said you were going to boycott the show. It didn't sound like half kidding to me. It sounded like a threat.
Jesse, if I'm threatening to boycott the show, do you think that's a serious threat?
I've never heard you threaten to boycott the show before.
Is he a Belichick disciple? Then we would know that it's got some teeth behind it. But maybe he's not.
Empty threats.
Maybe there's a lot of empty threats here. I don't know.
I specialize in empty threats. Yes, indeed. It's a key tenet to my parenting technique. But I'm told that you did bring some goodies into the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios. Is this true?
Yeah, you know, I'm always getting scolded for bringing Mission Barbecue, and I brought some Hall of Fame beef sticks last time, some Gotham Bagels several times, and, you know, Jason never seems to make his way down to Madison, so he's starting to get jealous, feeling bad. So I had his big Gotham orders ready, but unfortunately I canceled it because I didn't want to make Jason feel sad again. So instead, I just brought in some 100% Japanese Wagyu beef raised on my Six Springs farm down the road in Madison. And now it's probably a good time to have a little bite so that at least Jason can enjoy the flavor, the buttery texture, the tenderness, watching us enjoy this amazing beef right through his live stream. So let me give Jesse a little bit real quick here, and I'll be right back.
Ooh, he's coming to deliver.
Wait a minute. So is there a grill in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios? What are we... The heck's going in the words of Vince Lombardi? What the hell's going on out here?
Look at this.
Oh, let's try a piece. Oh. And then we can just explain to our guy, Jason.
Melt in your mouth.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
If that's not the best piece of beef we've ever had, look at the marbling. Look at the tenderness. Oh, it melts in your mouth.
It's perfect.
You wouldn't like this.
Terrible.
I don't think you
know. Yeah. Way awful. You're the worst.
He just went into the production room with Wagyu beef.
He dangled his beef in front of our webcam.
That can get you in a lot of trouble in some places.
It's so good. It's so good, Jason.
Cancel the segment. We're just going to eat steak the rest of the way here. That was Hall of Fame beef Wagyu ribeye. And then I got a strip underneath, so I needed to take care of my guy, Jesse, right here. He looked hungry when we walked in this morning. Oh, my gosh, that is so good.
So
nothing
Joe,
but salt
us,
on there.
Tell us, this is a great opportunity for an infomercial for your beef production. Tell us a little more about that aspect, because you have, after your career ended, you have diversified your portfolio. You've done a lot of cool stuff as a businessman, but fill people in a little bit on Hall of Fame beef.
So 2012, bought a farm in Boscobel, Wisconsin. You know, always wanted a little place to go take the kids, go hunting, go fishing, be a country boy. Because even though I grew up in Brookfield and I saw farms, I didn't grow up on a farm. But I did always dream of maybe owning a farm someday, being able to get out in the country and, you know, live that country boy lifestyle, which is sort of what was always in my heart. But then it wasn't until I retired that the kids said, hey, Dad, you know, it'd be awesome now that you got all this time on your hands because you're not playing in the NFL and you're retired. Why don't we get some cows for pets? That would be awesome.
Oh boy.
I was like, oh boy, do you guys know how much work livestock are? Like, I'm not set up for this at all. But then I was like, you know what? I really like to eat. And pretty much all of the things that I've done since I retired has been around athletics, workouts, Sports Advantage, or food. Gotham Bagels, Mission Barbecue, All Cleveland Coffee. So I'm like, well, at least it fits with me being a guy that always overate for a living. That's basically what kept me in the NFL. And I love beef. So I'm looking for something to kind of pour my energy and my passion and my attention to detail into. So, hey, let's see if I can raise the best beef on planet Earth. And so we started in 2018 and then started raising some steers and gave it to family friends. and they thought it was amazing. But everybody's biased. It's like when you make your own dinner, you're going to think that that's the greatest meal you've ever had, even if you burn the lasagna or do whatever. It doesn't matter. If you made it, you're going to love it. Same thing with your family. If you raised it in your garden, they're going to go, oh, this is so good. So gave it to my buddy who's a chef, James Beard Award finalist for Best Chef in the Midwest. Chef Dan Bonanno, Pig in a Fur Coat, right down the street from us. Amazing spot. Next time you get to Madison, you got to check out his restaurant. It's incredible. But gave it to him because I'm like, hey, just give me an honest opinion because I'm thinking about selling this to the public. This is, to me, too good to just keep to myself. We really hit something. We're raising these animals along the banks of the Blue River, amazing lush pastures in the Driftless area, which has an unbelievable amount of soil fertility, the grass they're eating. It just gives them this incredibly buttery, marbled texture. And so I gave it to him, and he was like, wow. That's better than the stuff that I can buy. And I said, say no more. That's it. So then since then, we've just been trying to grow the herd. And then in my quest, my passion for trying to figure out legitimately, without worrying about the cost, can I raise the best beef on planet Earth? How do I do it? Asking questions of the right people, trying to figure out what breed I want, kind of led me to raising Japanese Wagyu, which a lot of people don't realize that you can actually buy Wisconsin-raised, American-raised, 100% Japanese Wagyu, because in the 90s, before they banned cattle leaving their country, they exported like 200 animals. And so a lot of those descendants are still in our country. You can buy genetics, the embryos, and all these things, and then build your herd like that. And so I just said, hey, if I'm going to do this, I only know one way to do things, so I'm going to do it right. So we went to auctions. We found the best genetics in the country. We recently, after hearing our story, Vermont Wagyu, which is one of the best Wagyu ranches in the world, not just America, been doing it for two decades. They were looking to get rid of their cow herd because they're getting out of the genetics world and just kind of focusing on finishing animals and selling direct to consumer in their e-commerce business. They have won Best Steak in America award several times. And they heard our story. They heard my passion. I talked to the owner, Dr. Sheila Patinkin. And so she actually sold me almost every single one of her cows that it was in her breeding program to breed this amazing Japanese 100% full-blood Wagyu in Wisconsin, in the Driftless area. So we've been doing that and working on just trying to make guys like Jason Wilde happy when he opens up that freezer box of Hall of Fame beef at his house and he looks at the most beautiful steaks and sticks and ground beef that he's ever seen in the entire world. And so that's been my passion project. That's what we're chasing right now. And I think Jesse will tell you, it's probably the best bite of steak he's ever had. And it's not like I got a grill sitting outside ESPN Wisconsin right now. I cooked that this morning, brought it in a container. But I hope someday, Jason, maybe I have to go to Green Bay to feed you. But I hope you get an opportunity to taste this delightful Wagyu beef from Hall of Fame Beef at my farm, Six Springs Farm.
I'm not kidding, Jason. And I didn't know any of that story. That was the best bite of steak I've had in my life.
Just telling you.
That was so good.
You heard it here first.
I look forward to that package being delivered. Quick question before we move on. You did say at the beginning of that great story that your kids wanted cows for pets. Do they have a full grasp now as they've gotten older that they are not, in fact, pets, and the fate that these cows ultimately meet before they end up being eaten by Jesse?
If I could be productive after my time on Earth is gone and I could make people as happy as those beef cows do make me and my family and friends, I would hope that my children would do the same thing with me. But it was interesting. They were at a perfect age because I think my youngest was like one and then my oldest was at maybe eight, right? So they were old enough to know what was going on, but not like fully able to have like a really strong opinion one way or the other. And so the first several years of worth of animals that we had, we were naming them after our kids, grandmas and grandpas, aunts and uncles, friends. And so they learned like, oh, let's go feed Jack the steer. It's going to be so fun because we go out there and we'll get a bucket of corn from the grain bin, go over and get in the feed trough and feed Jack and feed Logan and Cameron and stuff. And then a couple years later, all of a sudden we got Logan burgers. We got some Jack ribeyes in there. And they asked the question, and they realized what it was, but they hadn't fully developed like their opinions yet enough to be like, no way I'm going to try this. So they were open to trying it. And when they tried it, they were like, wow, this is really good. And so I think it was really important for them to understand like, okay, I can get over it because this is the circle of life. This is how agriculture works. And wow, that's really good beef. That's an amazing beef stick. They love the beef sticks, by the way. The apple cheddar is like their favorite thing on planet Earth. But they got over that. And then now it's not a big deal that, hey, we got these amazing cows. I love feeding them. They're my pets. And then, oh, by the way, we eat them. My wife, however, it took her a while. She had a steer when she was in like high school. And then for like 20 years, she didn't eat beef. So it took her getting pregnant with our oldest, Logan, at 28. So I think, geez, it was probably like 15 years. Didn't eat beef after they ate their pet cow, Norman.
Norman.
So we wanted to avoid that, which thankfully we did. Because Normie, he was delicious. Let me tell you.
All right, we need to kick off the 10 o'clock hour, and Brian Gutekunst is speaking at the podium, and he said something interesting that we need to get to. We'll get to that when we kick off the 10 o'clock hour in 2 minutes. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.